Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Cricket Collective from TalkSport 2. I'm not John Norman and he's not Jared Kimber, but over the next hour we'll let you decide whether that's a good thing or not. Yes, it's Steve Harmison and Andrew McKenna taking a look at the first test between England and the West Indies, previewing the second match at Old Trafford, and we'll talk about the very long-awaited return of recreational cricket. All coming up on this week's Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. Harmy, well, fantastic to speak to you again. Fantastic to speak to you when we've actually had a test match. Yes, it's back.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, Mac. And it's great. It was a fantastic test match. It was what you wanted. There was, you know, there was a few runs. A little bit of luck as though what it was. It was going to be a little bit of rustiness because players hadn't played for such a long time. Different, without a crowd. But I thought there was some excellent individual performances, some good passages of play, and an element of same old England. And I think that sums it up in a nutshell. I thought the West Indies thoroughly deserved the win. And England have got some huge questions to answer, whether it's the selection committee, whether it's the selectors themselves, whether it's the coaching staff or the captain, for the makeup not only of England's side, yeah, but a lot of things in the game plan as well.
I was thinking about this earlier. Do you think we're looking at this game maybe through rose-tinted glasses because we were all just so desperate to see Test cricket again? Or was it as good a game as we've all been saying it was?
No, I think it was a good game of cricket. I think it wasn't a world-beating, this is going to be the greatest game that's ever played, but it was a good game of cricket. There was some, you know, high level of skill, especially with the ball, which surprised me a little bit because as a bowler myself, I know it does take you a while to get going. You normally like two or three first-class matches or a little bit more and, you know, a couple of weeks in the nets before you get going. And these players haven't had a great deal, especially somebody like Shannon Gabriel, who got man of the match, who got 9 wickets in the match. And there was a question mark whether A, he was going to come on this tour because of injury. B, had he, you know, really done enough to pass his fitness test? Well, you know, I thought he was at his skill level was high. I thought his pace was up, and he got the wickets. So it was more the batsmen that looked rusty in this test match rather than the bowlers. But I think as a spectacle goes, I think when the ball is, you know, put in the right area and you're asking questions, especially of batsmen with techniques or who are out of not in sort of had much form behind them, I think it does bode for a good test match, and that's what it was. I thought, you know what, I thought that England, we can knock England as much as you want. I thought the West Indies bowled brilliantly throughout this whole test match to put themselves in a position to win the match. In England, same old, the batting woes will continue.
Which is the interesting bit for me, because straight after the game, it was all, oh, well, England picked the wrong team, or they should have done this at the toss. But whether they should have and whether they shouldn't have, those two decisions were made before a ball was sent down. There was then, well, I was about to say 5 days play, but 4 and a bit days play because of the time we lost on day one. Well, actually, they could have made all of those discussions irrelevant. I'm not sure how much of a difference Stuart Broad would have made. The issue was they didn't put enough runs on the board. Now, Stuart Broad might have played, and by the way, I still don't know, for those people who want Stuart Broad to play, who he would have played instead of, because I thought they all actually had very strong claims to play. But I don't see how Stuart Broad playing would have made that much of a difference if you're only just making over 200 in the first innings, and then was it 7 for 50 in the second innings? I mean, you're not going to win test matches like that.
Absolutely, Macca, and I'm with you. I wanted the day before the game, Stuart Broad was, for me, was a shoo-in. I couldn't believe he wasn't playing. And let's get this right. This is why I said right at the top. Is it the selectors? Is it the coaching staff? Was it the captain? Somebody in there has decided that the West Indies was going to be taken a little bit lightly. Make no mistake about it. Edgbaston, first test match, Ashes. Stuart Broad is the first name alongside Jimmy Anderson. They're the first names on the team sheet when you're in English conditions with the Duke Bowl. I don't understand why that has changed when it comes to the West Indies. Understand, you've got Broad, you've got Wood and Archer. England didn't lose this game because of the team that they picked. England didn't lose this game because Ben Stokes won the toss and decided to bat first in sort of rainy, murky conditions. England lost this game because, and I'm loath to say it, and I really am, because Macca, I hear that when people, you know, former players make headlines because, you know, going too strong and too hard. For me, that top seven, top eight, because they could have had somebody else in there, that top eight batting unit, it was the most inexperienced and arguably the weakest I have ever seen for England, and that's something which disappointed me. When I you could have picked Bairstow in there, would give you a little bit more experience. You could have picked Moeen Ali at number eight, who would have given you a little bit more experience. England have gone down the route of not picking Broad, not picking them two lads that I've just mentioned, and Bairstow and Ali, who have got experience, and gone with a very youthful top order, who have not played for a long, long time and played against top quality international bowlers. And when you do that, you're running the risk of potentially happening what has just happened. All out for 204, you know, like you said before, 70 runs, 55 wickets. This is what potentially could happen. So whoever's made these decisions have got to live by these decisions, and they've got to be criticised for them, because for me, that's what's let England down. It hasn't been all about Stuart Broad and the decision at the toss. It was, we have played an inexperienced batting lineup without our captain and put a lot of pressure on Ben Stokes. When you go down that batting unit, Rory Burns hasn't played for a long, long time. You know, Sibley is still trying to find his way. The world of cricket was on Denley's shoulders. The eyes were on Denley for the whole test match, because they knew that if Crawley got any sort of runs, he was the one that was going to make way for Joe Root. Stokes is the only batsman, because obviously captain, that goes with it. Pope is still relatively young. And Butler, everybody's having their say about Joss Butler the same way as about Joe Denley. That, for me, was just too much pressure on that. That could have been alleviated by putting a couple of senior players who are around the group, put them in until the captain comes back. But they didn't, and that's what they pay the penalty. Because I just think they've took the West Indies too lightly in this first test match. The 1-0 down in the Wisden Trophy. The West Indies hold the Wisden Trophy. England have got to win two test matches. Is it, you know, you'll talk about not timing for it's not time to panic. It's not. They shouldn't panic. If they think that the wicket at Old Trafford's got a bit of pace in it, then Stuart Broad doesn't play, because you've got two 90-mile-an-hour bowlers who bowl relatively well. But it doesn't take away from what happened with the bat.
I'm delighted to say that Rory Dullard from the Press Association is joining us here on the Cricket Collective. He was at the Aegeus Bowl. He was actually there for the warm-up game as well. So he's a man well used to the experience of being in the cricket bubble. Rory, thanks very much for joining us. You've just been listening to what Harmy was saying there. What was, as you were leaving the ground the other night after the conclusion of the first test, what was your overriding sense of that first game?
Well, honestly, without wanting to sort of romanticise it too much, as I was driving home, I was overwhelmingly pleased to have seen some cricket and to see some really good cricket. It was a fantastic match, and that really carried me through a little bit. Now, the England management don't have the luxury of being romantic about it. They've lost a test match and they're 1-0 behind. So they've got some serious questions to ask themselves. But I think for the majority of cricket fans, and let's remember, this was watched and listened to by an absolutely phenomenal amount of people around the world because everyone's been missing cricket for 4 months. So, you know, the eyes of the world were on the 22 guys out there. But yeah, I mean, I've listened to Harmy there and it does seem like there was an unusual amount of questions over that 11, really, at the end of the 5 days for it being the first match of a summer. Now, it's a pretty unique situation because nobody's playing. There's no body of evidence in county cricket for who should be in the team. There's no recent test matches even to go on. So it was a slightly rough decision. And also, you do get the impression, whether it's right or wrong, I know in professional sport, you always think about the next match, but you know, they are picking 6 test match teams in 7 weeks. So there's a bit of juggling to be done.
I know what you're saying there. And that sometimes gets me fired up. This is the England cricket team. And I've said it millions of times. It's not the dog and duck. We are playing 6 test matches. These are going, these test match points, test match rankings, whatever. I've heard ridiculous things like Jimmy Anderson should be rested for this week. Jimmy Anderson, he's 37 year old. He's England's leading wicket taker. He's playing at Old Trafford. You know, the ball, as a bowler, you're getting more and more rhythm as the more you play. He doesn't want to miss out in this game because he's thinking what's going to happen in 5-6 weeks' time. His team's 1-0 down. He wants to play. I think it's very, very difficult when you turn around and say, well, think about what's happening in the 6th test match. Think about what's happening in the 2nd test match. England are 1-0 down now in a series, a 3-match series where they don't hold a trophy. In England, it potentially could rain for 2 days. That means England don't win the Wisden Trophy if we have a draw in these 2 test matches. Do we really want our best bowlers sitting out watching from a sideline with a high-vis bib on? It's not for me. I don't think it's good enough. And I think that was right from the start. As soon as they picked this side, there's an element of, well, something's happened with Johnny Bairstow. They don't seem to want Johnny Bairstow in and around that team. They're all for picking good lads. Good lads don't win your test matches. Good players do. And I think that's what's wrong with England at the moment.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you're saying that top order is light on a bit of experience, light on a bit of know-how, perhaps. Well, you look at the... Because with the conditions being what they are in the bubble, they have to carry 7 players as reserves in and around the team, in nets, in practice. And the next 2 batsmen in are Dan Lawrence and James Bracey, both uncapped. So if England... If that's the pecking order as we understand it for red ball cricket at the moment, the next 2 men in will be making debuts.
Yeah. Rory, just on the experience of the bubble itself, how did you get on with it in terms of the test match? As I mentioned, you were actually at the warm-up as well, the only journalist at the warm-up, so you were a bit more experienced with it. And also, how did the players find it? What was the sort of the discussion afterwards? I'm thinking maybe, you know, from the bowlers in terms of how well they were able to keep the shine on the ball. I mean, was the general consensus was it wasn't actually a million miles off of a normal test match?
Yeah, now... Both warm-up matches, I did a West Indies warm-up match at Old Trafford as well. So both of the England and the West Indies warm-up matches felt strange. They felt like middle practice. You know, it was, you could hear chit-chat, frankly, from the slips. And for all that, both teams talked it up as an intense practice and how, you know, they were playing for places. So there was a little riding on it. It didn't feel right. And I think the England players themselves actually asked the ECB if they could look at crowd noise in the stadium, which is something we've seen in other sports. I think that conversation was had after the England warm-up match. They said it didn't feel right and they would like some kind of hum and just some kind of ambient noise, really, because the Aegeus ball is absolutely in the middle of nowhere. You can't even hear anything in the background as you would at Old Trafford. So they found it strange. Now, as soon as day one hit, that I lost that feeling. I don't know what it was. I mean, we started with the Black Lives Matter moment. Maybe that amped up the emotion or the intensity. It could have been the fact that it was an international test match, a game of cricket going on out in the middle. But I've got to say that sort of eeriness disappeared a little bit. It felt intense and really your eyes were glued on the 22 yards in the middle and not the empty stands. Now, the only moment that it felt, I thought, really unusual was when Jermaine Blackwood walked off the pitch, having won the match for his team, 95 runs on the day five pitch, nearly half the chase. And he walked off and there was just this really polite, gentle ripple, like it was like you were playing for your second 11 at the park and, you know, you had 20 mates giving you a nice little clap while they finished the sandwiches. That felt out of keeping with the achievement.
Rory Dullard from the Press Association joining us on the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. But how's the Caribbean reacted to the West Indies victory? TalkSport 2's man in Barbados, Barry Wilkinson, explains all.
The feeling in the West Indies is that the West Indies have won the World Cup. That's what it feels like. I mean, the amount of people who have called in on radio programs today congratulating the West Indies, the amount of messages that have flooded Facebook and other social media, you just get the feeling that they've done something grand. And I understand how people feel because, I mean, they have not had much to celebrate recently. COVID-19 has just like sucked the energy out of everyone. And we weren't thinking that we were going to be seeing any cricket coming out of England this summer. So to actually see the first images and the first video of cricket coming out of England and the West Indies winning has brought joy to everyone. And I just get the impression as well that everyone was watching this test match from Kingston, Jamaica, right here to Bridgetown, Barbados. Just about everyone watched this test match because nothing else really was happening. Yes, there was some EPL going on, but the focus would have been on the West Indies. And people have fallen in love with test cricket again. The West Indies have not won an away opening match in a series against a team ranked above them since 2007. So in many respects, it is so understandable why people feel this way. And, you know, Jason Holder has been a massive inspiration to many, especially here in Barbados. He's well-loved. So people feel happy for him as well. And the West Indies team have gone through the mire. I mean, in the last two decades, they haven't had much to celebrate besides some T20 victories and World Cups and what have you. But Test cricket has really taken a banging. And if they can pull this off, you know, it will be a great series victory for the West Indies.
First delivery is bowled in. Joe Denley, I think he's got an inside edge.
25 again, done all the artwork, Joe Denley.
Joseph goes in and bowls in.
Goals again here, and he tries to cut the edges in, and Denley's out.
Joe's done extremely well in the past year, playing inside in some tough scenarios. So, you know, it's not for me to say.
Philander in, it's taken the outside edge of Josh Butler. A diving Quentin de Kock, he dives right in front of the man at first slip and takes the catch.
You can't keep getting out when you need him to perform, and he's got to score more. For the talent he has, he's got to score more. Batting at seven.
This is the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. It's Steve Harmison and Andrew McKenna this week taking a look at things. And of course, we've got a team to pick for Old Trafford in the second test match. And as you've just been hearing, the form of Joe Denley and Joss Butler are attracting a lot of discussion, shall we say. Now, Steve Harmison, we know that there's going to be one change, because that is Joe Root will be back in the squad and in the team. Congratulations, by the way, to Mr. and Mrs. Root on the safe arrival of their second child. But how much of a problem has Joe Root being back available created for England?
It's not too much of a problem. I think it's fantastic that, you know, Joe's been able to go away. He had a very, very, you know, personal triumph. To, you know, see a child come into the world as a father is something special. But England desperately need their captain back. Not that Ben Stokes did a bad job as captain. I thought he captained the team reasonably well. I thought his bowling changes, field positions were spot on. But, you know, we've talked about the inexperience of that batting unit, and England are desperate for their captain and their best player to be back in at number four. And unfortunately, for Joe Denley, I think he'd be the one that misses out. I think Zach Crawley showed enough in that second innings where he gets 76 of 127 balls. I think he's done enough now to take Joe Denley's place. And I think Joe Denley's been so close to being that international cricketer. He's just not turned a lot of them starts into a big three-figure score. And if he had done that, I think he would have kept his place. But unfortunately for Joe Denley, I think he might just miss out for the England captain coming back.
Is this the end for Joe Denley, though? Because if he's now not going to be in the team at this age, is there a point in him staying in the squad longer term? Is this the end for Joe Denley? And would that be harsh to end a man's international career after a test match in the most freakish of circumstances with no build-up whatsoever? We've never seen a game of cricket like this. Would it be fair to put a bright red line in solid ink through a man's name on the back of that?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, Macca, and I agree totally. I think it would be I would say unfair, because your career define your career by your performance, and your performance is over however long the amount of appearances you have in your career. So I think we're not just saying this is a new thing for Joe Denley. This is something that has gone throughout his whole test career, where he's getting into a good start. He's faced a lot of balls, but he hasn't accumulated the runs that the team or he would like. The problem he's got is one of the best players of all time, from an English point of view, is coming back, and he has to come back somewhere. And if it is the end of his career, then, you know, Joe can look at the circumstances and find himself a little bit hard done by. But I think when you look over the course of his career, he probably is the right man to make way for Joe Root. Is it the end? You never know. You never know what's going to happen at Old Trafford. Zach Crawley, Dom Sibley, Rory Burns, even Joe Root gets a bang on the hand, and you might have to go back to Joe Denley. But at the age of 34, it's one of them ages where you think, well, if he doesn't play for the rest of this summer, you know, does he move on to Pastures New and go with a younger model? Probably that would be the case. But to say it's the end, the way the world is at this moment in time, I think I don't think so. But I think it is the right call for England to move Joe Denley aside. It is the right call to bring the England captain in. And I think Zach Crawley, over the course of the start of his career, has showed that this kid's tempo at number three could be just what England need.
Well, let's hear from our own Darren Goff, who was talking about this on Drive Time with Andy Goldstein.
The one player that's got to go, it's Joe Denley. If you consider, there's since 2000, there's been 47 batsmen who have played for England in at least 15 test matches. I told this to Aid on Friday, and he averages under 30, mate. His 15 tests, he scored 18 and 29 this game. The other guys who have lower average were Jennings, who's made 200s in that time in 17 tests. In Milan, who played 15 tests and got 100. And then Nick Compton, who played 16 tests and got 200s. Joe Denley, high scores 90. And it's just not been good enough.
Now, the former England and Kent batsman, and of course Kent captain Rob Keyes, also has been speaking with Talk Sports about Joe Denley, of course his former Kent colleague.
I think if you ask Joe Denley himself, well, if they do come round to saying it's not you, it's Zach Crawley, I think I had enough opportunities, I had enough starts to go and really make that spot my own. And he wasn't able to do it. He's probably one of the best lads, most honest lads as well, Joe Denley. And I think he'd be pretty honest with his own assessment, as everyone else.
So that's the Joe Denley discussion. As we've already said a couple of times, you picked up on it early on as well, Harmy. England have been inexperienced, and Jason Holder actually admitted that England targeted that. With Joe Root coming back, then hopefully you address that. Now, Joss Butler's future in Test cricket. Actually, let's just hear from Rob Key once again, because obviously he's been in and around the circle. Rob Key spoke with us about Joss Butler.
I think we all just live in hope that this great white ball player can do it with the bat. Now, the chances are he's going to have one more Test match to show that. And then it might be Folkes, Bairstow, people like that. And then they'll just go in the gun as well. Because when Ben Folkes, if he struggles in any way, you know, Gabriel, this attack, then it'll be the same thing. The problem is, at the moment, it's not like anyone's had any cricket to stake a claim. So now, unless you're the only people playing cricket, bar club cricketers now, is the England Test team. So I think he'll get one more Test match. And it's probably then down to him to show them what he can do.
Now, Harmy, Rob Key there used a phrase, and he said, you hope Joss Butler can deliver. Yeah. I'm completely outed here as being completely a massive fan of Joss Butler. I have a huge man crush on Joss Butler. But actually, I think Keezy has used the right word there. At the moment, we're still hoping that Joss Butler can become that devastating player in Red Bull cricket. And at the moment, it is not happening.
Yeah, and I think the England selectors are exactly the same as what Keezy's saying there and what you're saying and what I'm saying, Macca. I think we're all in agreement that we all want Joss Butler to do well. Not just because it's the England cricket team. Yeah, Joss is such a nice guy and he's a great team man. He's somebody who gives a lot of energy to that team and that group, and he's got unbelievably natural talent. It just hasn't worked for him. For one reason or another, it just... Test match cricket doesn't seem to have worked for him. And when Keezy's saying there, he hoped, I hoped, I've said it many, many times throughout this African series, you know, we want him to do well because he could be a game changer at that bottom order, especially if, you know, England get off to a rock solid start. But it just hasn't seemed to happen. And I think the selectors have hoped as well because they've tried everything with him, whether you bat him at number five, he comes in at number six, you take the gloves off him, you give him the gloves. All these different ways that the England selectors have tried to keep Joss in the side. It hasn't seemed to work. And I am in agreement with Rob that he's probably going to get one more game. And again, what Keezy said is right. Whoever comes in next has got us just a bigger target on his head, because there's three of them. Surrey, you know, some people want, the Surrey members want Ben Folkes in. I personally don't see why Johnny Bairstow had to give the gloves up to go and bat in the top order when the top order were feeling. Just find somebody in the top order that can bat in the top order, because I thought Johnny Bairstow was scoring. Hunt. And what did he get? He had Johnny Bairstow had 600s. Yeah, batting at number seven, average of 35, got a modest average, 4,000 runs, 70. He's played 70. He's got 70 caps, and a lot of them is wicketkeeper. That, you know, having that coming in at number seven behind Stokes, I think that is a decent thing for your team. But on the Joss front, it's just unfortunate. It just hasn't worked for England as much as they've tried, and as much as we all wanted him to do well. If he doesn't perform at Old Trafford, where he's, you know, at home and feels comfortable, then I think England might make a change for the third Test match.
You see, the thing is which way they're going to go. You've mentioned it there. You've got two options. You've got Ben Folkes, and if Johnny sees me in the next few weeks and he hears this, he'll probably punch me in the face. But Ben Folkes is probably the better keeper. I'm not saying that Johnny's rubbish, by the way, because Johnny's not rubbish, and that's why he'd want to punch me in the face for saying it. But Ben Folkes is a better out-and-out keeper. And if you're replacing a guy who's making 20s and 30s, and you're going like for like, well, Ben Folkes can easily make you, I believe, 20s and 30s, but he will take that glove down the leg side, which Joss Butler should have taken. He is the best keeper by common consent in county cricket at the moment. However, I wonder if they're going to go down the Johnny Bairstow route, Harmy, because we've just said England had two poor batting performances. And I think Johnny Bairstow is, well, I think it's fairly obvious to anyone who's ever watched cricket. I think Johnny Bairstow is a better batsman than Ben Folkes at the moment. And therefore, I think that might really help him. Now, where they put him in the order, that's another question entirely. But you just think that if Joss Butler fails again with the bat, then Johnny, surely he's going to get the call.
I hope it's Johnny. I really do. And that's nothing against Ben Folkes. I think Ben Folkes is a fantastic gloveman. And I think he did a great job in Sri Lanka. But I think Johnny Bairstow at number seven was doing a decent job for his country when England's top order wasn't scoring any runs, and he got, because we had Joss Butler and we wanted to try and get Joss in the team, we decided, right, Johnny's going to play as an out-and-out batsman and take pressure off him, because, you know, he doesn't need the gloves because we've got somebody else that's there. I don't see what he did, you know, 100 what he's done, you know, that 100% wrong to get the gloves taken off him, other than, you know, they tried to fit Joss Butler in a team. It was like, we've got 11 players here, we're going to pick our best 11 players and fit them in by hook or by crook. So I think it should be Bairstow. I don't... I'm not sure if Johnny's done something wrong towards either the management or his face isn't fitting at this moment in time. But it just seems as though Johnny's been sort of moved to one side and he's been isolated a little bit. And I think England are a better side when Jolly Bairstow in it. And that is why I'd go for Bairstow. As I said, Folks didn't do, he didn't do a great deal wrong in Sri Lanka. But for me, who was going to get international hundreds batting at number six or number seven? And I would say Johnny Bairstow will get more than Josh Butler and Ben Folks.
So Harmy goes for Johnny Bairstow going forward if it doesn't work out with Josh Butler. What about Stuart Broad? Of course, he gave that really interesting interview with Sky TV during the game. We'll bring you some of that next and then have a discussion about Stuart Broad. Where does he fit in and how do you pick an England side for this Old Trafford test? You are listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm not a particularly emotional person, but I've found the last couple of days quite tough. So I'm disappointed would be an understatement. You know, you get disappointed if you drop your phone and break your screen. I've been frustrated, angry, gutted. I've probably bowled the best I've ever bowled in the last couple of years. I felt like it was my shirt. So it is hard to take, but also I'm quite pleased I feel frustrated and feel gutted and angry, because if I didn't, I'd have a different decision to make. I don't think I've got anything to prove. You know, England know what I can do. The selectors know what I can do. And when I get that opportunity again, you can bet that I'll be on the money.
It is the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. And that, of course, Stuart Broad speaking with Sky during the first Test match against the West Indies. A much discussed interview ever since he did it. I mean, it was a fascinating listen. Don't get me wrong, but it's made an awful lot of headlines since. Now, of course, at the end of the Test match, England captain Ben Stokes spoke with the media and was asked his thoughts about what Stuart Broad had said.
Looking at the interview he gave to Sky Sports, I thought it was absolutely brilliant to see the desire and passion that he showed in the answers that he gave. If he wasn't like that, then I would be worried. You know, if it was just, just hopefully we get picked for the next one, then, you know, I'd be a bit concerned. But to see somebody like that who's played over 100 test matches, got so many wickets as he has, to still see that fire burning deep inside and want to go out and perform for England at every opportunity. You know, it was fantastic to see as a senior player in this team, and amazing to still see that in somebody who's played so many games.
So, Steve Harmison, first of all, did Stuart Broad just be open and honest, which is, of course, what we always like players to be? Or should he have been more guarded, realising what he was going to say was going to be amplified all around the world? Or did Stuart Broad know exactly what he was doing?
Stuart Broad knew exactly what he was doing. Macca, this guy, Stuart Broad, backs himself to be the best bowler that's on this planet. That's why him and Anderson are so good, because they believe in their own ability and they've got confidence in their own ability and they back themselves in every way. That's why Stuart Broad is still playing, you know, and playing as many test matches as he does, as same as Jimmy Anderson. And Jimmy would have done something similar, because the simple fact is Stuart Broad thought he should have been playing. Now, Stuart Broad can take it on the chin, walk away, stay in the background, not a problem, let other people do the talking for him. Stuart Broad is like, right, I'm not going nowhere. I want to play at Old Trafford. And if I get a chance to do an interview, whether it's in the written or the, you know, the TV, I'm going to say exactly how I feel. And he was quite good. He's a good operator, Stuart. And then I thought he was spot on. I thought he got it perfectly right. Now he's basically saying, right, I was wanting to play. I back the team's decision, but I'm ready and I'm ready and waiting to go at Old Trafford. Now he is not thinking, right, oh, pressure's on me when I get to Old Trafford. He's thinking, when I get to Old Trafford, I'm going to show you that Stuart Broad is not finished as a bowler. And that's exactly what he's going to do. The argument on the other side is, does Stuart Broad play at Old Trafford? We're going to a ground which is normally has got a bit of pace in it. We've got two 90-mile-an-hour bowlers in Wood and Archer, who I thought Mark Wood can hit the... He can have time off and hit the ground running, no problem whatsoever, bowl 90-odd mile an hour. It just seems that's the way he's been made up. That's the way Mark Wood is, because of all the injuries he's had to come back. And he does nothing slowly. Bang, straight in. I thought Jofra Archer got better as the test match went on. Not just because his figures proved that. His rhythm looked as though he's better. He looked as though he had more control with the ball. His pace was getting better. So it's an interesting decision. If it's got pace in the wicket, England's bowling attack didn't do a great deal wrong. So it's not the bowling that's the problem, it's the batting. So why should we change this side? That's the difference. That's as has England's management team got the guts and got it in them to go, you know what? We bowled all right here. We're going to have a bit more pace in, a bit more assistance. We've seen what happened in St. Lucia when Woody really got stuck into them. I'm going to go with the same batting unit. One change, Denley out, Root in. That would be not so much a brave call, but I think possibly could be the right call.
Absolutely. And the other thing, just quickly on the Stuart Broad thing as well, I think people need to realise this isn't come off the back of being dropped for a game at Southampton. This is Stuart Broad who thinks he's had the raw end of it, because he hammered his way round Sri Lanka a couple of winters ago, wasn't picked. Then, as you mentioned, in the West Indies, and this is nothing against Sam Curran, but Stuart Broad suddenly found himself out of a side and watched Sam Curran open the bowling in a test match, which I think we'll all now agree was one of the worst decisions that's ever been made in the history of cricket. And I'm including Nasser Hussain going, we'll have a bowl in that.
Mac, it just seems that there's somebody or something inside that England management system that wants to be trying too clever for their own good. Move Bairstow out. Bring Butler in. You know, that hasn't worked. We'll try and split Broad and Anderson up. And Nasser Hussain, you mentioned there, he says something all the time, horses for courses. You know, horses for courses, away from home, Broad and Anderson probably don't play on the same side because of the Kookaburra ball and a flat pitch. Horses for courses on a rainy, damp Southampton day, Stuart Broad and Jimmy Anderson are the first two names you pick. You go to Old Trafford where there's a bit more pace in it. It's a bit, you know, a bit of a flatter wicket. Then you might think about leaving Broad or Anderson out. Probably Broad, because of the way Jimmy bowls at Old Trafford, as opposed to probably playing Stuart at somewhere like Trent Bridge. Now horses for courses selections, but there's somebody seems to be wanting to be funky in that management group. Whether it's the selectors and they're trying to, you know, move people out. For me, it's backfiring. It's backfired a few times now. And Broad has carried this bowling attack for the last 2 years around the world while Jimmy's been missing. And that's why Stuart Broad should have played at Southampton. I'd argue, yes, he probably not played at Old Trafford. That was probably the right decision if it's the pitch that we expect it to be, with a little bit of pace and carry in it. Now, they've dug a hole for themselves. I just wonder if they're brave enough to stand up to Stuart Broad and say, nope, you're not playing at Old Trafford either.
And of course, the problem is you can't even say to Stuart, go back to Notts and play a game, because of course, exactly. There isn't any county cricket at the moment. So you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, and you can't do anything about it. Interesting you mentioned Jofra Archer there, because Ben Stokes was asked about Jofra Archer's performance in the press conference afterwards. And what didn't get spiky, but maybe a little bit tetchy.
He's an X-factor player, but he's also... you know, not trying to read into that too much. He's also a very skillful player. So it's great to see him back out on the field bowling like that today. But let's not look too far forward ahead like you guys did last time after the World Cup and then start shooting him down again. It's great signs to see Jofra being able to run in and do what he did today. So, yeah, very pleased with his efforts.
Well, the one thing we have to all agree was, I think, Harmy, we were all desperate to see how Jofra Archer went because, of course, we've now... found, identified, and hopefully cured the elbow issue. And it did look, I mean, I'm sorry to do this to Ben Stokes because this is just what he was asking us not to do, to get too excited and allow Jofra to get back in. But it did look like Jofra was back to the bowler that we first saw in that Ashes series. And that's great news.
It is great news. And, you know, Ben, I think Ben's got a little bit of a point where Jofra came in with this great big fanfare. Probably the closest I can say that had that was Kevin Peterson during my time. You are going to get a big fanfare when you've got somebody as a special talent like Jofra. But as a bowler, I understood exactly where Jofra is at this moment in time. It does take sometimes, especially when you bowl as quickly as Jofra does, it does take that little bit more time to get yourself going. I'll go on experience for myself. It used to take me 2 or 3 weeks just to get it up straight, you know, from my bowling action to go from sort of falling over every second, third ball to like getting it, you know, action higher and action stronger. And it's just trying to replicate your bowling action and getting the muscles going and getting them strengthened up for limit the stiffness day after day after day after. And there's no cricket being involved. It's very difficult to go from first gear to fifth gear. Mark Woods, the only person I've ever seen, I think, him and Simon Jones, that I've ever seen do it. But I thought there was good signs for Jofra Archer as he got better during the test match. And that's why, if you're going to bring Stuart Broad back, then that's why I'd potentially keep Archer in the side, because Archer seemed to be getting better, and keep his rhythm going, get him through this next test match, and then... possibly, if they bring Broad back, then Wood would probably miss out. And then you'd argue, well, see how Jofra's elbow goes, because they are special, them two. Wood and Archer, they're special. We need them away from home more than we probably need them at home. But we need one of them in the side every single test match we play because of the pace that they bowl at. I thought Archer bowled better as the game went on. I thought Woody bowled with good pace. Didn't have a great deal of luck. But... you know, when Ben Stokes goes and says we put too much, we have built them up too much. Again, Ben, you're in international sport. The world was watching. The world is always watching, and that's the nature of the beast. Unfortunately, now.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one final thing about Manchester Test. I did a bit of digging in this one because I did wonder how the England team were going to get from Southampton to Manchester. And obviously, they're going to make their way up the motorway. But the reason for that, I was thinking, you know, with COVID, were they going to be on a team coach? And in effect, if you like, be on tour, albeit in their own country. And I thought that might be quite an interesting way of going about it. But I found out from within the England setup that they're actually driving their own cars from Southampton to Manchester. Now, I suppose on one hand, you can say, well, actually, that makes sense. They're in and around their own surroundings. And it gives them a little bit of a break away from the England group of players. They've all been so close together. And they probably can't nip home due to the regulations and whatever. But I did wonder, Steve, if it might have been an idea to almost have, like, be on tour in your own country, do it as a bus journey, you know, have some fun all together on the bus up to Manchester, you know, do it old school kind of thing. I wondered if that might be a little kind of morale thing for the squad.
Yeah, but I think they're spending that much time with each other throughout this whole bubble effect. I think it could be a good way of getting your own space. I've done it once, I think, with England in England, where we had to drive to Edgbaston and then get the coach And for me, I didn't enjoy it. It didn't work. Plus, what, it took me 4 hours to get to Edgbaston. And then wherever we finished the test, the whatever the series was, we had to get back to Edgbaston to get our cars to go home. So for me, I think logistically, it's not a bad thing, because then at the end of the test series, once it's done, you can disperse and get off as quickly as you possibly can, because you're spending that much time with each other. I don't have an issue or a problem with that. These guys get tested every sort of second, third day, whenever it is. So if there was any symptoms that did crop up, I'm sure they'll be getting, they'd quickly get isolated. So I don't see there being too much of a health issue with it. But it's actually, you know what, after a long, hard week like that, it's actually quite nice to drive your own car, listen to your own music, or listen to whatever radio station you want, and be in your own space for 3 or 4 hours, because you spend so much time with each other. Sometimes it is a good thing to get released, so I don't mind that. I think it's quite a good idea.
It is the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2, the final part of this week.
Exactly.
And that's probably a very relaxing place to be. Of course, recreational cricket was back this weekend. We'll have a chat with David Smith from the Institute of Cricket about that next here on TalkSport. Recreational cricket back. So it's time for our Breaking the Boundaries feature with the Institute of Cricket.
Breaking Boundaries on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket. For the best chance of making it in professional cricket, you need to train with us. Find out more at instituteofcricket.com.
And I'm delighted to say that David Smith from the Institute of Cricket is joining us here on TalkSport 2. David, thanks very much for joining us. You could almost hear the sighs and the whoops and of excitement all up and down the country on Saturday afternoon as recreational cricket was finally back.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think that this was the proper Super Saturday, wasn't it? On Saturday, with the return of recreational cricket. Look, it's been a long summer, I suppose. You know, lots of speculation about when cricket will return, but to finally get the green light in a format that I think encourages adults to want to get back to playing, it was obviously crucial. You know, I think there was obviously a lot of speculation about maybe 6 or 8 a side returning, and look, I just don't think that would have got a lot of adult cricketers back in, to playing cricket. But now the fact that it's 11 aside and, 40 overs, what a result. It's great to come on the show and finally start being positive and talking about cricket again.
Absolutely. Now, president of Ashington Cricket Club, Steve Harmison, did you pop along to the first Saturday?
I did, yeah. I popped along. We played, Ashington played a 15-over game. More from the fact that Newcastle United kicked off at 12:30. That's why they played a 15-over game. But it was good to see the boys back out and playing. And it was quite amusing, because brother against brother. My two brothers, James against Ben. And Ben, who's got a obviously first-class cricket background on his CV, he bowled James' first ball in the match, so there wasn't much love lost in the game of cricket. But it was good to see them back playing. And David, just you mentioned there the 40 overs, because I get fired up sometimes when I see the Premier League and the player they were going to play time cricket in 50 overs, and it's something that we didn't mirror the professional game. But what we've got here now is 40 overs. I think they're going to play coloured clothing up in the northeast. I'm intrigued to know, and I would love to push the fact that we should be using first-class grounds more, i.e. something as an incentive, because in Northumberland and Durham, you've got a Northumberland group of eight, Durham group of eight, and I think there might be a final, but I think the final should be played at Durham's Chester Street Cricket Ground. And I think that would work throughout the whole country, played at these big venues, a big final from a regional point of view, to give these recreational cricketers an incentive for something, a day out to look forward to.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. I think that, my local county, Warwickshire, are actually really good with that. They do. And last summer, we launched a 100-ball competition last year, which was obviously a sort of a prelude to the starting of the 100-ball this summer. But the final of that competition actually was played on the main ground at Edgbaston, which was obviously a great, a great incentive for the players to obviously enter the competition, first of all, but also to work hard to get to the final, because what a day out that everybody remembers as a club cricketer getting to play at a test ground. And I absolutely agree. I mean, in the Birmingham League, they are we're doing four groups of six, which are all regionalised competitions, and it's actually going to be Red Bull cricket white clothing, because they felt that it was lots of clubs maybe didn't have the correct clothing or as many sort of surprise as that as possible. So I think they just wanted to get the game up and running and keep it as simple as possible. But I think obviously white ball and colour clothing will come into the Premier League next summer.
It's an interesting one, David, because I was hearing over the weekend, as you mentioned, this sort of maximum of 40 overs. So it was interesting because some I don't know if it's leagues, but certainly some clubs had said, well, I tell you what, instead of playing 40 overs each, why not play two lots of 2020 games? And that way we can maybe use 15, 16 players between those two games. And that way more people get an involvement over the course of the weekend. And that to me seemed a really good idea. But of course, maybe that will happen in the sort of your third and fourth 11 kind of thing. Maybe the first and the seconds need to play that sort of more, I hate to use the word, but more serious competition.
Yeah, you know, as we talked about before, you know, we were desperate just to get any form of cricket back, you know, whether that was in a, you know, the form of a 10-over competition or a 40-over competition. So, you know, I think we'll certainly sort of take what we can get. But and in the Birmingham League, we've actually got league cricket returning this weekend coming on the 18th of July. So four teams where I'm from, Nolan Dorridge Cricket Club, we've got four teams that start their league format, all 40-over cricket, you know, this weekend. So that's going to be 44 players that are, you know, desperately looking forward to getting back into some competitive cricket, albeit with the adaptations that the ECB have put in. So,
and David, what about the junior section? We've got the school, the official school holders coming up in the next few weeks. Are we going to get kids back playing the amount and the volume of cricket like they used to?
I think so. I think so. Look, we've been inundated since we returned to training back on the 18th of May, from a one-to-one group coaching, club coaching, it's all kicking back off. And now every club's just going to work through how to maximise their ground use over the next 2-3 months, realistically, to get as many children playing cricket as possible. Because I think a lot of children spend a lot of time winter training now as well. So if they'd have just had another period of training throughout the summer and then go back into a winter phase of training, it would have been really demoralising for them. But now, you know, clubs are very much looking to maximise ground use and get as many children playing the game as possible this summer.
I always remember, David, from my time playing club cricket, that we always got a bit of a problem about the back end of August, start of September, as, of course, the football season kicked in and so many of the guys went and either played club football themselves or indeed went and watched the local sides once the football league season kicked off. I'm trying to work out in my head, do you think we're going to be better off this year or worse off? I suppose we're going to be better off because there's going to be no football games for people to watch and therefore they'll stay and play cricket. But then again, there's going to be that overlap of people who actually want to play for their football team.
Yeah, and we have a similar issue to deal with, really. At our club, we've got a couple of guys that play semi-pro football. So, you know, it's quite common for them that sort of by the time August comes around that the cricket bag's put away and the football boots come back out. So, and I can't see that, you know, I can't see that changing because obviously recreational footballers are just as keen to get back to playing, you know, their sport as obviously what cricketers are. So, yeah, look, I think I think, you know, the clubs are used to that problem, you know, and are obviously used to dealing with that. But, you know, hopefully that's where the junior players come in and they can actually feed into playing some, you know, some more senior cricket as well.
So now that we're back up and running, there was some interesting regulations that were put in place. Like there had to be running lanes for the striker and the non-striking batsman so they didn't get in the way of the bowler and all of that. Was there any sort of feedback? Was there any word from the players about actually how easy that was to implement? Or was it just a case, do you think that everyone just sort of maybe just went back in and sort of did what they've been so trained to do for so long?
Yeah, I think out of all the adaptations, I think that's probably the going to be the most challenging one for players to adapt to, because, you know, if you're going for a quick single, you're going to forget to go on the 2 metre line, you know, and then run in a straight line. So I think that's going to be probably the hardest adaptation for players to get used to. But it's like everything, isn't it? In two or three weeks down the line, and I'm sure that players, you know, will start to adapt to that and get used to the way of the new game working. But yeah, I can't see many players, if they're running for a quick single, looking for that white line before running in a straight line. So,
David, thank you so much for joining us. That was the Breaking
the
Boundaries feature with the Institute of Cricket here on TalkSport 2.
Breaking Boundaries on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket. For the best chance of making it in professional cricket, you need to train with us. Find out more at instituteofcricket.com.
So there you go. Club cricket is back up and running. An interesting one, this, Harmony, because, of course, this week we are a year on from England's World Cup win. And it means that with all of this happening, we've not had a chance to build on the success of that win. Or do you know what? Maybe we did, but we're not actually been able to see it for the last few months. Maybe that ship has now sailed on. It's an interesting one, this, from you know, cricket's point of view in England and Wales at the moment, because there was this great opportunity to build. You know, cricket last summer was everywhere, thanks to the World Cup, thanks to the Ashes. It does feel like that we've had the opportunity to build on that, kind of taken away from us.
Yeah, I think it was there. I still think it is there. I think it was there. I've seen a big marked difference at the end of the last cricket season, from the start of the cricket season. I think there was a lot during. I've seen, obviously, my kids in the county setups going to, like, the junior training. You see the cricket shirts that they've got on, and the World Cup. It was everywhere. I think it was there, and I do believe it will come back once we start playing the game of cricket again. It's just fascinating to see, you know, some of the, not just in club cricket, but in professional cricket, especially when first class cricket starts, how many of these new formats, how many of these new rules, how many of these new tournaments are still with us in 3 to 5 years' time? Because I think there's a lot of good ideas have come out off the back of just wanting to get cricket back up played, like David said there. And there's some rule changes that possibly the lawmakers were frightened to do. Was that probably the best way to say it? Frightened to change the norm, or worried to change the norm just in case it backfired. Now they can implement 40 overs, regional competitions, potentially play in the finals at the closest first-class venue. These are all good ideas, which probably wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for this pandemic. So, you know, I still think there's, you know, the club cricket is still bouncing. I still think juniors are wanting to play the game. And, you know, fingers crossed we get a good weather for the back end of the summer over the weekends, and we can get some good cricket played well into late September.
So just finally then, Harmy, we are running out of time. England, as you mentioned, the new norm. Well, as is England's norm lately, they're going to go into the second test match of a series 1-0 down. Are you expecting England to win the Old Trafford test?
Well, yes, I would say so. I think England maybe just going to kick it on the backside. Root comes back in, probably for Denley. And if the wicket's got some pace in it, then you'd be loath to change the bowling unit. But I do think they will bring Broad back, probably at the expense of Mark Wood, and keep Mark Wood for, and replace Mark Wood with Jock for Archer for the third test match. So I can only see minimal changes, and Josh Butler getting a chance at home to potentially save his international test match career.
Harmy, thank you so much. Really enjoyed chatting, as always. We'll keep you right up to date with the events at Old Trafford, of course, and the Cricket Collective. We'll be back next week here on TalkSport 2.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.